Tezra, Peldor, Impatre, Bren, Bentel, Vetan, Ulan, Stenet.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer for the last time in 2018. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, playing his Ruskin flute as he thinks contemplatively about the last year of his life.
And this week, we're here to talk about, kind of repeating myself, the best, worst, weirdest, wildest moments of 2018.
Yeah, you know, Cam, I think it was a very exciting year for Star Trek. We had the conclusion of Star Trek Discovery. We got a lot of big news about future content coming out for the franchise.
Just a little bit of content.
Just a little bit of content.
We've also almost covered an entire other season of a new Star Trek show in the Short Treks.
That, well, you say other season, I say almost, well, pretty much like one episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know,
well, that's so, true enough. But it's three episodes. There's only four in this season, so.
Yeah, but if you look at the number of minutes.
Sure.
It's about one episode.
Look, if every TV show could be like this where I could cover a whole season in like an hour.
Sure.
That would be amazing.
I think there's something on Netflix, though. Yeah. It's called The End of the Effing World. I think every episode, like, if you look at the totality of it, it measures up to, I think, like the running time of Blade Runner.
Oh, okay.
So there you go.
Blade Runner 1 or 2.
Blade Runner 2048.
Okay, so about 2.5 hours in.
For those who decided to tune in for a Star Trek podcast, why don't we dive into it? We're going to have a fun episode here in which we're going to talk about some of our highlights. Cam, I've got a bit of a surprise quiz that I'm going to put up for you as well.
Okay.
We also want to maybe talk about our expectations for, you know, 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we
it's funny, when we started this podcast it was 2014, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, what are your expectations for Star Trek in 2015?
And I think
to remain dead.
Well, and I think we even did an episode where our best guess was that we would not get new Star Trek content on television until 2020 at the earliest.
Yeah.
The fact that it happened in 2017, and we're going to get a barrage of content in 2019.
It's a cornucopia of delights coming our way in 2019.
As fans for years and years, we cannot complain at this. But
right.
So a little later on, we are going to be having a lot of surprises in store. So please keep listening. It's going to be a fun one. Why don't we just start up with this? Cam, I think the biggest news that came out of Star Trek, the franchise this year, was that Picard is back.
I thought it was going to be Short Treks.
That was the second biggest news.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's funny because going into it, when there were rumors of this swirling around, you were a little bit more cynical of it. What happened when we were in the Star Trek Las Vegas convention and Patrick Stewart came out on stage, Cam?
The most shameless moment of my life where I just leaped to my feet, like barking like a seal. I was so excited.
Was there any more communal experience surrounded by thousands of Star Trek fans that you've ever experienced? The answer is no.
No, I got nothing. I was trying to come up with like a wise-ass answer, and I got nothing.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, like, it was just this kind of out-of-body experience, though, and we're just surrounded by nothing but die-hard Star Trek fans that were over the moon seeing Patrick Stewart walk out on stage and announce he's coming back as Picard. And the reason why, I don't think it's just because he's being reflective of his career. I think this is a man that can be very happy with his career. I think it's a man that recognizes that maybe a character, an inspirational character like Picard, really needs to be around in kind of the tumultuous era that we're living in here. And I think the way that he was posing it to the fans, and he was making very clear, don't expect this to be kind of a TNG redux. You know, this is not what we want to aim to do. And why would Patrick Stewart come back if it's going to be that? So I think he was saying all the right things. Whether that comes to fruition in about a year's time, I'm curious to see, if nothing else.
Right. A lot of people complain about artists making political statements publicly, but I kind of enjoy when there's periods that are very tumultuous politically. You'll see a lot of artists make very inspirational work. Like, it really leads to some really fantastic stuff. And I think you're seeing it in multiple genres right now, but this is a perfect time for Star Trek, because I think Star Trek really does, you know, look to that future where we can bridge differences. It's not about my side's right, your side's wrong. It's about how do we bridge these differences and move forward. I'd like to believe that Patrick Stewart, you know, on some level recognizes this and understands why Picard is so important at this moment.
And executive producer Alex Kurtzman, I think he's saying all the right things right now. He was describing the Picard series as more contemplative, and I think that's exactly what we want from a character like Picard. Although Patrick Stewart, he was always known for wanting to make Picard more of an action hero, but I think he is smart enough. Look, it was unfortunate timing for us in 2017, but he did an entire panel devoted to the Inner Light.
Yeah.
That was
very unfortunate for us.
Up against the subspace transmissions panel, which we caught about 20 minutes of his before we had to run to the next ballroom. And thankfully, our some of the best friends that we could ever ask for did come to our panel, which was much appreciated. And then we're like, wow, the rest of the people must really hate Patrick Stewart that showed up here. that was an interesting memory. But that's from 2017. I do digress.
No, that's fair enough. No, this was a really cool year. And, you know, when you talk about communal experiences this year and having that Picard moment at the convention, it was also just really cool welcoming the Discovery people to the convention for the first time ever. And you could definitely tell it was not the rapturous reaction that Patrick Stewart got. You know, you could tell people are a little maybe more on the fence about Discovery. They're not quite sure. But nonetheless, it was a lot of fun to welcome these actors in and see them respond so positively to, you know, the fans who were really into hearing them and meeting them and all that sort of stuff.
It was an interesting dichotomy to see maybe how much, you know, the room filled to capacity for the Discovery stars versus how much the photo lines actually filled to capacity. Because I think for a lot of the older actors, they've kind of reached their peak. Like, how many more times do you need to get that photo of, say, Brent Spiner that, you know, you've done a million times before?
That's why you got to be smart, though, like George Takei, and cap the line.
Yeah.
So that every year it looks full.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
But with the Discovery, you know, actors, look, there's lines like out to Wazoo here. And I think it's hopefully indicative of kind of their staying power. And look, I think they charmed, like anybody who went to a Discovery panel, I think was very much charmed by all the actors, no matter how big or small.
And you could definitely tell that, like, Mary Wiseman and Sonequa Martin-Green definitely are building up a following.
Oh, yeah. But if we stay on kind of that Star Trek Discovery, you know, track here, we do have more additional content. You're kind of joking about it, but we do have the idea of putting out these short tracks, and I think this is indicative of where the franchise is going, where if we have these streaming services, which, and I truly believe that is the future of Star Trek, it's not broadcast television, although in Canada we do watch it on cable television, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But I think this is going to be interesting that Star Trek's proving you don't need to do just a 45-minute episode. Hey, we've already done the movie thing.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek can be any bits and piece that you want to make of it. And I think we've been impressed by at least like two out of the three short treks that have appeared so far. And I think this just tells me there's such a future for this kind of content consumption, and Star Trek can be kind of a leader in it for CBS moving forward.
No, 100%. And I'm excited to see what they do. You know, you and I have been kind of following the progress of Lucasfilm and their new shows. And it's like, what they're saying isn't that exciting to me. Like, it doesn't seem like Lucasfilm right now is tapping into what makes Star Wars really exciting. Maybe the shows will be great, but it's just in terms of pre-release, here's what we're doing. They aren't hooks that you're like, wow, that sounds really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I really feel like Star Trek has nailed that down, and that everything they're putting out sounds very distinctive and unique. And it makes me want to watch these shows.
You and I had a conversation over dinner, five days ago, and I was kind of disappointed that we didn't have a recorder there to share it with all of our listeners, but we were talking about kind of the future of this Picard series and what it could mean.
Right.
And so tapping into kind of that hook that you think that Star Trek's doing pretty well right now, you and I couldn't quite figure out what the Picard series might be if it's an ongoing series, not a one-off series. And you brought up a very good point, Cam. You said, you know what, if it's a ship-based series, is any fan really going to be all that invested in who his supporting cast is? If there's another person at helm or at tactical who's not Worf or Wesley, does anyone really care?
Yeah.
And that's going to be kind of a tough thing to, you know, push forward with. But you and I went back and forth on this. There has not been an announcement for the Star Trek Academy series yet.
I was going to say, the interesting point you brought up.
Well,
our theory.
The theory is, I think it might make the most sense if this is supposed to be an ongoing series. Is this actually one and the same? Is the Picard series going to be the Academy series, where we have this esteemed elder who is passing on his knowledge to the next, you know, generation? No pun intended there.
Right.
What do you
the
think?
The next generation.
Yes, the second generation.
Yeah.
What do you think of that particular idea? A, do you think it's something that is likely? B, do you think it's something that you would be interested watching week to week?
Well, number one, I think it's really genius for you to get this out there now so that if you're right, you can really have bragging rights and air this clip on next year's Best Of.
Get out of my brain, Cam. Actually, I literally had that thought yesterday as I was walking back to my apartment, but yeah.
But I actually really like this idea. When we were coming up with ideas for what a Picard spinoff can be, we did that a couple episodes on Picard this year surrounding the announcement of that spinoff. But
they're all within like a 1 month period where it's just like all the news is just like coming down hard.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, I really do like the idea of this Starfleet Academy with Picard show just because I can picture what that show could be. Mm-hmm. I can see that being something unique and original that we've never quite seen in Star Trek, grounded or anchored by a Star Trek star who's very iconic, who's going to carry us into this world in a way where there's something recognizable about it. It's not like we're being thrown into Starfleet Academy with like, here's a bunch of 20-somethings. Aren't they great? And you're like, I guess. I don't know. They have no experience. They seem kind of fumbling.
Well, and I pitched this idea to you a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think it ever made the air. But I think the best thing for a Starfleet Academy series to do, though, is look at a show like Community, which is a great comedy series. And what it really was is centered around this study group. Mm-hmm. It was a core cast of, seven or eight people.
Yeah.
And they put them in a situation where they had to do teamwork every single episode. And you really were drawn into the cast as well as just kind of the character dynamics here. I think if you just steal that format, I'm not talking about like making it a comedy.
What, have a really lousy season four?
Well, that's true. Yeah, well, that was the gas leak season.
That's true.
Yeah. Just steal that format where you center it around, six, seven cadets who, I don't know, they're in a study group. There's a reason for them to be together and do this teamwork sort of stuff. And you have Picard come in. He gets three, just knockout scenes every single week. And I think that's a way to kind of get the, again, no pun intended, the best of both worlds here, where you have the Patrick Stewart factor and you're actually becoming invested in who these characters are that make up the supporting cast.
And you could have little missions like The Good Shepherd, the episode from Voyager, where you have Picard going out on some missions with these kids we're following. And so, you asked, would I watch a show? I would totally watch a show. It actually sounds to me, it has that optimism of Star Trek because, again, these are young people aspiring to meet the standards set by all these great Starfleet figures we've seen in the past. Like, that's inspirational to me. Mm-hmm. And it's also something we haven't seen in, this is, Starfleet Academy. We've seen glimpses of it. We've seen it on the show before, obviously. But we've never seen the journey from beginning to end other than a very brief journey through it in Star Trek 2009.
Right. And so, look, if this makes it to air, this time next year, I just want CBS to know that I will be suing them.
Wow.
Yes. So anyways, what else that really popped out to you?
You said that so solemnly.
Yeah. I want my money. Thank you, CBS.
Well, you say what else jumped out to me, and I kind of joked about them off the top. Short Treks really did jump out to me this year because I never saw them coming.
Yeah.
They were something that, look, we had that clip released post-discovery of the Georgiou Section 31 stuff, this deleted scene. And that was actually interesting to me. Not so much the content of it, which, we'll find out in season two if this stuff works at all creatively. But the idea of throwing out that deleted scene being like, no, this is canon. And it was like, huh, that's weird. The only other time I'd come across that was in the wake, and that is a very the disastrous wake of Batman v Superman, where they released a clip of Lex Luthor talking to a parademon or something. I don't remember who he was talking to, but they were like, no, this is canon. And it was like cut from the movie, and I was like, well, that's weird. And so when Discovery did it, I was like, oh, them too. It was almost like, is this like a craze? Is this a thing now? Like, it's not enough to see the movie. You've got to watch the 2-minute clip that's apparently canon. And then little did I realize that, these short treks almost feel like a continuing evolution of those. It's like,
right.
Here's like just a short, you know, little clip again. This is tying into the continuing adventures of the show you're watching. And I'm kind of on board for these. Yeah. Like, in a way, I wasn't with the Giorgio thing. I was like, they should have just tacked that onto the end credits as like a post-credits scene or something. But these short treks, I actually have really enjoyed them in the way they filled out elements of the Discovery universe that, you know, being a 15 or 14 episode a season show, they don't have the time for these diversion origin stories. Yeah. Or, you know, like an episode like Calypso, where does that fit into a 14 episode arc on Discovery?
Exactly.
Like, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy them opening up that universe for fun ideas.
Well, and it's also part and parcel of kind of a realization I had, why Star Trek is kind of like religion, in that it can mean anything to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think they're really seizing on right now with just kind of the way that they're pushing out contents. And I think it's, you know, kind of fantastic prospects. Cam, this is the best we've had it.
Yeah.
Since like the 1990s.
Yeah.
So it's amazing to be in the thick of it right now doing a podcast.
And of course, like Lower Decks is exciting to me too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you and I are actually more excited about the Lower Decks prospects than the Picard series, though it may, you know, waver depending on how great
sure.
this Picard spinoff is.
Right. Right. I mean, maybe one of them is lousy. Who knows? But at this point, like, there's so much promise with each of them that's exciting to me. And, you know, I was kind of energized. You and I went and saw Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse the other night.
I was just going to bring this
up.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Watching that show, I was like, I really hope that the people behind Lower Decks see this movie. And look, they don't have the budget to do the animation that movie has.
Yeah.
But just the way that movie really looks outside the box of how you can tell a Spider-Man story and work in the types of references that fans can love but aren't crucial for like a newbie. Like, a newbie can sit through Spider-Verse and have a blast, but they're not going to pick up on, you know, references to like 1970s or 1960s comic books necessarily. But it all works. And I'm really hoping that Lower Decks has that similar energy where it can work in really geeky elements of Star Trek in a really fun, innovative way, but not in a way that drags it down for people that didn't watch these episodes.
But even from a narrative visual storytelling perspective, I watched Spider-Verse. I'm like, there's no way this could have ever been watchable as a live action film.
Right.
And I really think that Lower Decks is the opportunity to kind of seize on that same sort of potential there with just telling Star Trek visually in a way that would never, ever work on live action.
Right.
But there's so much potential here with regards to animation. So yes, we're definitely looking forward to what 2019 has to bring. I think Lower Decks is most likely going to be more of a 2020 sort of thing.
Sure.
But I'm looking forward to that.
You might see some stills, though, before the end of the year.
Fingers crossed.
So, yeah.
So, Cam, why don't you and I go back and forth, just talk about our top three podcast episodes of the year. We'll start with you, sir.
Okay, well, I really enjoy the episodes where we kind of pit characters against one another. Those, to me, are often the most fun to record. And we did one, Starfleet's Worst Employee Award.
Oh, okay.
That was an absolute blast.
That was on my list, but I've got some backups as well.
Okay.
Look, just the opportunity to, you know, denigrate Barkley in a good-spirited sort of way, but just contemplating how did this guy make it through Starfleet, all things considered. With remember how Wesley barely even made it in? The boy genius?
Yeah.
And yet they're giving, like, commissions to one, you know, Reg Barkley?
Right. And just talking about, like, characters like Krall and all of these...
I mean, Balthazar Edison.
Balthazar Edison. All of these bizarro villains within the Star Trek tapestry, they stand out so much, but it's like, yeah, I had such a blast talking about how did these people get there? And in some cases, what was their plan and all that sort of stuff? And then pitting them against each other to decide who was the worst of them all.
So if we're talking about, you know, pitting officers against each other, one of the big highlights for me, we did an episode called Battle of the Junior Officers.
Yeah.
And that was a fun one there.
I went back and forth between that and the Worst Employee Award.
Well, we've got it covered now here.
Yeah.
And this is such a fun one because we kind of looked at all of these ensigns and maybe, you know, junior grade lieutenants, and we're like, okay, so what is their pedigree? How do they fit in with the crew, and how effective are they? And for the longest time, I think and I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who has not listened to this episode, I really recommend it, but for the longest time, it looked as if this one somewhat irritating junior officer was going to be declared the best
right.
of all. And this is only because we have a randomized computer that tells us who's making it to the next round. So
it's almost like the episode we did way back, Take Me to Your Alien Leader, maybe 2 years ago, where Kodos almost won the whole thing.
That
we're
was
like,
pretty
come
funny.
On.
Yeah. That was summer 2017.
Okay.
Yeah. So that look, if you're looking for stuff to listen to over Christmas break, I think those that's a good 1-2 bang of just kind of these fun comparisons of some of these officers. You're like, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, here. What's another good episode for you that you would recommend?
Well, the one I named before, The Worst Employee Award, that's like a really loose, fun episode. And I always really enjoy those. But I think there's like some we do that are really important to the canon of the podcast, like are really appointment episodes for people to go back to years from now or whenever, like to stand out as like, what are the important episodes of this podcast? And I thought our Best Voyager episodes podcast was really strong.
We're totally on the same page here, but as I said before, Cam, I've got a couple backups here.
Okay, so, well, that's great.
No, but you know, I love the fact that we're able to, Voyager's probably our least favorite.
Yeah.
You know, but that isn't to say that it's a bad series, though. It's just, it's one that does not grip us the same way that all the other series have been able to accomplish. But I think it was a fantastic experience for us to really go back, think hard, rewatch a lot of episodes. And you and I got to debate, you know, which one would make it to the next round to determine what was essentially the best Star Trek Voyager episode. And I think it was one that maybe a lot of fans wouldn't necessarily pick.
Yeah, yeah. And we did an episode earlier in the year on, it was for our episode 200, actually, where we talked about the best Star Trek episodes. And I think with that one, there was maybe some more expected titles you're going to hear, like City on the Edge of Forever or whatever, Best of Both Worlds. Whereas with the Voyager one, there was some titles in there that I don't even know if we talked about that much on the podcast. So that was really exciting to me. I really enjoy when we can dive into episodes that we just haven't talked very much about, because we're going to talk about Best of Both Worlds a lot in the future, and we have in the past.
Well, there's a couple episodes that you and I have kind of retired. We're
right.
like, okay, we've done, Tyler's brought up Who Watches the Watchers enough times.
Or Prophet and Lace, yeah.
Exactly. So, but the Voyager one, though, it was just a fantastic experience, because I think we kind of felt that we had neglected Voyager to a certain degree.
Yeah.
But there's so much gold in there that really became illuminated as we, you know, debated what the best episodes were.
And we've often struggled with trying to determine what the strength of Voyager is. Like, we can nail down what the strengths are of all the other series for the most part. I think Enterprise is a little wobbly in what its strengths are.
Mm-hmm.
I think it kind of finds it in its later seasons. But like Voyager, we could never really nail it down totally. And I feel like these episodes helped us a lot. And I think that episode yielded some discoveries there. And we had a lot of response to that episode, which, again, was super exciting to hear people chime in with their own picks. And it was just interesting to me how few people had the same lists.
And it's an interesting thing, though, because if you look at lists of best Star Trek Voyager episodes, they're all over the place. So there doesn't seem to be much consistency about what maybe fans decide are the best episodes. And so that's kind of fun for you and I to go back and forth on this here.
It also actually makes the series kind of interesting in a way that maybe the others aren't, where when you don't have a set, you know, collection of episodes that are the best, you get a lot more discussion as to why is this one great? Why is this one great? Whereas when you get to TNG or TOS, there's a pretty set number you're going to see on any list, which isn't very interesting when you're making arguments as to, you know, like, why is the Enterprise incident one of the best TOS episodes? And people are like, well, it's not. It's not in the top 10 at all. And you're like, okay, well, that's fair enough, but it is really good.
Yeah.
Whereas with Voyager, there's open discussion as to figuring out what is the top 10 or what are the great episodes of Voyager.
Okay, next one up for me. And I feel by the time we get to the end of the year, we often kind of, we haven't had enough time to let some of our later episodes kind of sink in. But I think the one that you and I did most recently here was the Discovery rewatch.
Yeah.
And I think you and I, that was a long episode.
I think it might be our longest non-Best of the Year episode.
And the Best of the Year ones, they get a little long just because we feature a lot of clips.
We had a two-hour one year or something. So, yeah.
But I like the fact that you and I were able to, look, we've had Discovery in our brains for more than a year now, and then you and I went and rewatched the Blu-rays, and it really made us interpret this series a little bit differently. We had new insights. I think you and I were able to go in depth, even though we did a bit of a kind of lightning round as we pushed through every single episode of the season.
Yeah.
And we kept asking ourselves, you know, what does it all add up to? What are Discovery's strengths? Where can it improve? And what our hopes are for season two? And I think, look, if there's just anybody who wants like a big summary of season one and they don't want to listen to every single individual podcast episode that we did on this, give this one a listen. It's about an hour and a half long, and we really kind of dive into it in a very thoughtful manner. And I know, I think this one just pops out to me as kind of what we're doing best here. I think it's really one of our strengths here at Subspace, where we're willing to have some fun. We're willing to think critically about things. And I think we're fair to it, even though, I mean, we did have our nitpicks here.
And what I enjoyed a lot about that episode, too, is like we were talking about episodes and just talking about the minutiae of them.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the arc elements or, you know, the stuff that you didn't necessarily notice the first time around. Whereas when we're doing our coverage of, say, Lethe, we're talking a lot about Sarek's mindscape and all that sort
of
stuff.
Or like the story.
Yeah.
You know, or like we're summarizing or describing what happens in the episode. But like you said, here we're kind
like of looking more at the surface stuff. Whereas that episode you're talking about, the one we recorded last week, it was all the sort of elements that are very easy to miss the first time around.
Exactly.
So that was a lot of fun, yeah.
Cam, your last one for top three of the year.
Yeah, well, when I talked about my Voyager episodes that I really enjoyed, I, again, was saying that I really enjoy podcast episodes where we can talk about episodes of the show that we don't cover normally at all. And so I really enjoyed the episode we did, Oddball episodes. Mm. And we looked into kind of one episode from each series and how it stood outside the rest of the episodes, like 1159 from Voyager. We did Far Beyond the Stars from Deep Space Nine. We did Assignment Earth from the original series. And we could point out kind of what was kooky about these episodes and delve into, would these work as their own spin-offs and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, the constant theme between all these episodes is they were not focused on any of the main characters. They were mostly focused on characters that, generally speaking, we hadn't really met before.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really kind of popped about like whether these episodes stand on their own. And as you say, Cam, would they work week to week if they were to get their own spin-offs? And we all know that CBS All Access is handing out spin-offs like their Platinum on a Ferengi taxing colony.
Right. Maybe not our most comprehensive title of the year, but okay, it was a really good episode.
We struggled with that title. Like, we were like, how do we summarize exactly what we're trying to talk about here?
Yeah, and folks, you have no idea how often we have long discussions about what to title an episode of a podcast.
I think our longest one was Friendships in the Final Frontier.
And that took us half an hour to come up with.
And we had a guest sitting there. I think, was that Patrick Johnston was sitting there with us as we were trying to figure out?
Might have been.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's too long ago.
Or maybe we may have just been like lamenting that in front of him, maybe when he came in to guest the next week. But okay, so last one for me, though. We kind of had a lot of the same picks here. So one of my backups here is going to be further back in the year. This is called Star Trek The Next Generation's Lost Years.
Right.
Where we looked at all the things that would have happened to these characters that the movies kind of missed. You know, you go into Star Trek First Contact, all of a sudden, Geordi has no visor anymore. So we're like, well, if this is an episode, if this is a hypothetical season 8 of TNG, you know, what would the episode centered around with him, you know, getting rid of his visor and going with these ocular implants? And we're able to discuss in depth, you know, characters like Barclay, his journey, you know, Worf's journey as well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a fun kind of like make-believe sort of episode. There's like, hey, what would Q be doing here? I think you and I just had a lot of fun pitching different ideas, some serious, some silly, and I think that's kind of what we like doing on the show, is just kind of thinking about the what ifs.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Star Trek fans like doing quite a bit too.
We did an episode, I believe, in 2017 on Star Trek's Unsolved Mysteries.
Yeah.
And I like that this TNG episode allows us to do the same thing, come up with these questions we might have about TNG post Nemesis, and then try and answer them in fun, hypothetical ways.
Yeah.
That was a really good one. And I'd like to maybe do another one of those at some point. We'll see.
Okay. So, Cam, before we get into maybe some of the surprises of the year, some of the things that we have in store for our listeners, I've got a bit of a quiz for you that I'm going to pose to you.
Okay.
Okay, so pretend it's Christmas, which it is kind of that season right now.
I can pretend it is Christmas.
Yeah. You're stuck in a snowy mountain town. There's no way out to go see your family. It's kind of sad, you know, but the one thing that you have to do in this, you know, motel is you have access to Netflix. And so let me ask you this, Cam. You get one episode of Star Trek for a matinee. You get an episode.
I was just going to watch that Kurt Russell Christmas movie over and over again.
Oh, the Christmas Chronicles?
Yeah.
Okay. So you've got a one episode for a matinee, one episode for an evening viewing, and one episode for a midnight viewing. So I was hoping to kind of think about, like, okay, so what does the time of day tell me? What does the mood tell me? What do I want from Star Trek any given moment? You know, we've done lists about, like, our favorite episodes, best episodes, you know, Battle of the Voyager episodes, blah, blah, blah. But I think this is kind of a different way to think about it because it is so kind of situation dependent here. So I've got a couple, you know, banked here in my brain. I don't know. Do you want me to go first? Do you have any that are popping out to you right now?
You can go ahead.
Okay. So for me, I think the episode that's forever going to be associated with being kind of this afternoon episode is one that I watched in the afternoon in syndication way back in the day. This is coming up immediately after The Way of the Warrior aired on Deep Space Nine. It was an explosive episode. I was feeling re-energized by Deep Space Nine at this point. Worf was coming back to the series. And I sat down for the big follow-up, which was The Visitor.
Right.
And to say that, I was like kind of going, huh, what is this all about here? And then I was just absolutely sucked in. It was a pretty young Tyler at the time watching it. And I was just blown away by The Visitor watching it. I think it was a rainy afternoon as well. And it to me, it was just kind of this thing that I'll forever really think about, you know, having that afternoon viewing. And this is one that it's going to, I don't want to say it's going to ease you into your Star Trek marathon.
This is a really depressing Christmas you're having.
But, you know, I'm thinking about my family. Right. I'm away from my family as well. It's all situational dependent.
Sure.
So, you know, I think that's going to help me realize the importance of family while I'm away for the holidays. You know, Cam, I said this, maybe you're stuck in a snowy mountain town. I should have said that your runabout is broken on your way to the Gratitude Festival on Deep Space Nine.
Well, it's funny you say Gratitude Festival because I actually put fascination question mark for this one.
for your matinee?
For my matinee episode.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
For me, for the evening episode, I'm going with a solid TNG one. One that is a little, it's got some serious themes, but it's also a fun one to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Tapestry.
Okay.
I think this would make for a great evening viewing.
Right. Yeah, it's very, It's a Wonderful Life.
Very, and it's Christmas, Cam.
Yeah.
It is Christmas, you know. Finally, it hits midnight. It's officially Boxing Day, at least, you know, in Canada. And I'm like, you know what? I need something to just rev me up. I'm going to cheat a little bit. I'm going in with a two-parter here.
Oh, geez.
I'm going with something wild. One of my favorite episodes.
Workforce.
Not quite. Gambit.
Gambit.
No. In all seriousness, I'm going with Inamirk Darkly.
Okay.
This is my favorite episode of Star Trek Enterprise. It's fan servicey, but not in a way that makes me cringe. Everything's kind of dependent on what we know of the Prime characters, so it's great to see them in the Mirror Universe. And we get kind of a jolt of TOS in here. So I have, you know, TNG, TOS, DS9, all covered here, and Enterprise all covered here in my selection of these episodes here for the loneliest Christmas / Gratitude Festival I'll ever experience.
But no Voyager.
I came close. No Discovery either.
Cole, and you're stalking Voyager.
Yeah, sorry. So, Cam, you've had a few moments to think about this thing that I've proposed to you. Why don't you tell me your picks?
Okay, so for the matinee, I actually went with something lighter. I find like my concentration in the afternoon is less than in the evening. In the evening, I'm much more focused on what I'm watching. Whereas in the afternoon, I like something lighter and maybe more fun to watch. And so I said His Way from Deep Space Nine.
Okay.
Because this is the episode, in case you've forgotten, where Odo is dealing with his feelings for Kira, and he's getting like tutored by Vic Fontaine on how to be, you know, a romantic figure in the you know, in the world of Deep Space Nine and win her over. And, you know, it's a kind of a musical comedy episode. You have a lot of great hangout factor stuff of him with Vic, and you have just this winning moment where he manages to woo Kira, and then they have the big kiss in the hallway. And I mean, like, it's such a feel-good episode. It's fun, it's playful, it has like the musical numbers that are just a blast. And when you look at a lot of the great Christmas movies or specials, they are musicals. And to me, this one just fits the bill. It's just so feel-good fun.
I think that's just a fun one to watch, especially during the holidays. And, you know, I think it's great because I learned everything I know about women from Vic Fontaine.
Right.
And so I to relive that would be fantastic for me. Yes.
Yes. And so for the evening, I picked City on the Edge of Forever.
No, you're going to watch His Way again.
I'm just going to watch Shades of Grey over and over again because then I get all these great TNG stories.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I said City on the Edge of Forever because, you know, we touched on It's a Wonderful Life a minute ago with your choice of Tapestry, mm-hmm. actually for the same time period, for the evening.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the Christmas stories are kind of melancholy when you look at them. You know, The Christmas Carol, It's a Wonderful Life. I watched The Bishop's Wife the other night with Cary Grant, and it has a little bit of melancholy as well. And I really thought that that was an interesting trend. And I thought, you know, City on the Edge of Forever, it's not a Christmas story, but it has a little bit of a Christmas feel. You know, when you think of Kirk and Edith Keeler walking the streets of New York, you know, they're kind of bundled up. It's cold. He's pointing out the stars to her. It feels a little bit like the holiday season, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have that kind of romance there. It's a very good, like, episode in terms of giving people kind of the warm feels. And I think that's something Star Trek struggles to do a lot, and it really pays off big time here, and I think that's what people remember the most about the episode. It does have, obviously, a very sad finale with Edith Keeler's ultimate fate, but again, that's kind of the melancholy of these holiday season movies. It comes at the end in this case as opposed to the beginning, but ultimately the story is so sweeping that I can kind of go along with it.
Sounds like Edith Keeler got coal in her stocking this year. Cam, what is your midnight viewing?
So the midnight... Okay, I'm getting a little punchy now. Yeah. I'm probably like burnt out from eating candy canes just all day long.
Candy canes?
I don't know.
Ew. Candy canes are disgusting.
Candy canes and Christmas cake.
Yeah. Oh god. Like the fruitcake?
Yeah.
Oh god. Who eats any of those things? Nobody seriously enjoys candy canes. They're gross. People just eat them because they remember them from childhood.
I guess, yeah. Well, that's true. And there actually are good candy canes if you get the ones that are like fruit flavored or like other flavored.
Okay.
But the actual standard candy canes, I don't get it. Actually, at the SkyTrain terminal, on my way to do this podcast, I think it was the last episode, actually, there was people just handing out free candy canes to everyone, and they were not handing them out very easily.
No.
People were kind of like, I'm good. Yeah. So for the late night showing, I'm a little punchy. I need a pick-me-up. I need some energy. And I thought, you know what? I'm going for it. Magic to make the sanest man go mad.
Oh, wow. Going with Discovery now.
Yeah, going for the Discovery episode because, you know, I talked about it last week. That party scene is so much fun. And not only that, you get to experience it over and over again.
That's true.
Every time you cut back with that Wyclef Jean music, like just bumping, it's so much fun. It's like a burst of energy again and again throughout that episode. And I thought...
Much like how Harry Mudd bursts out of a space whale.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> but less style and less smoothness.
But it's all... so indicative of what we discussed in our previous episode about how the strengths of Star Trek Discovery became apparent to us when we watch an episode like Sanest Man, and we're like, wow, Discovery works best when it's got a bit of a lighter touch to it.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was just a fantastic episode. It's, for both of us, it is our highlight of season one.
Sure. And when you look at the moments like Burnham dancing with Ash Tyler and, you know, sharing that kiss, or Burnham and Stamets dancing in the hallway. Like, that feels kind of like a perfect way to end the holidays.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It has that kind of togetherness, that kind of family kind of spirit of Star Trek, or romance in the Ash Tyler case. But I just think it's a very winning way to close out the night.
I like it, Cam. Mm. And maybe we can close out the night with some fun. Why don't we jump? Our first surprise for listeners will be some of our favorite clips from the year. For you and I, we go through our list, and I think you and I are critical of the series. We go deep into stuff, but I realize you and I think we just like to giggle like little schoolboys most of the time.
Sure.
And so most of these clips
That's what founded this podcast.
I don't think we would have been able to do this for like 4 years if we aren't able to laugh every single week.
Right.
So most of these clips, they're just stuff, you know, that we find funny. There's a couple ones that are insightful and deep. And so I think we want to share them with everybody here. Why don't we start off with, you know, we were talking earlier, Cam, about how we want to pay more attention to Star Trek Voyager. So why don't we start off with a clip delving into something we were very curious about in the Dark Frontier full-length episode. Why don't we take it away, computer? the big, I guess, climax that you could make the argument for is the reveal that Magnus has been assimilated and he's on display for Seven of Nine.
Really effective horror moment.
Very horrifying. Yeah. Though. Although it does come in that same sequence where there's a naked holographic human.
Okay, I want to talk about that. In fact, I may need another half hour to talk about
okay.
this. Okay, so they are talking about, you know, the humans are species 5618.
Okay.
And they bring up this hologram image of a male model in his underwear.
Yes.
And I was fascinated because
I was
like,
fascinated too.
I'm like, okay, first off, how did they put out the call for this actor or model to take this spot? Like, how did they decide that that's what best represented humanity?
You mean a white male?
Yeah.
That was one thing.
But not just a white male, because, let's be honest, in 1990s TV, that was going to happen.
I know.
But why does he look like a male, like, underwear model? That's what's fascinating to me.
I think it's based on Patrick Stewart's body, you know, with Locutus and everything. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just was so fascinated by this decision on so many levels.
Why is he even in underwear, though?
I don't know.
Like, that was bizarre, too. Like, you don't need to show nudity on Star Trek, but there's a way to cut around the camera and make it clear that, you know, like, the guy's naked. It just makes no sense that the Borg could be like, better hide his privates.
Maybe it's tied into their programming that humans are fairly modest.
Okay.
So they're like, oh, he better have some underwear on. Yeah. Otherwise, he'll feel awkward.
But the guy's haircut looked super 90s as well. It was like, okay.
It was amazing. He looked like someone from,
Just Shoot Me?
I was going to say Melrose Place.
Yeah, okay.
Just Shoot Me. That's like David Spade.
Yeah, it was David Spade who signed up for this holographic representation of humanity.
And they've CG'd the whole body. Yeah. I just thought this was amazing. I mean, okay, the Borg are all about perfection. So was this male model's body like the Borg ideal of what human physical perfection is? I'm trying to justify it in my head, even though I don't think they put that much thought into it.
I know. I was just baffled. Yeah. I
howled with laughter, actually, when it popped up.
Well, it wasn't like a 10-second sequence.
No, it was long.
It went on for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, we get it. He's a naked dude.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Does that guy get residuals off that episode?
Yeah. I mean, it paid his way through modeling school. Yeah.
No kidding.
Well, Cam, I don't find anything wrong with how he was dressed.
I'm hoping for those same underwear for Christmas.
Don't worry. I made sure Santa put them in your... You're not getting coal in your stocking, Cam. Okay, so next up here, you actually alluded to this earlier on and with regards to one of your favorite episodes of the year, and we actually have like two little clips here to share. This is from our Oddball episodes in which we really kind of contemplate what is going on with some of the characters featured. I find it, I'm very mixed on Gary Seven. Like, what is he supposed to be as a character? He's been trained by aliens to be the most perfect human possible. Is that his backstory?
Not a single flaw, a perfect body, according to McCoy.
Dr. McCoy.
That was also demanded by Robert Lansing's agent.
Yeah, so he's a human being.
Yes.
Trained by aliens. And he's
there to stop catastrophes in 1968 Earth.
Which, and I honestly believe it. If you look at 1960s Earth, it seems as if like catastrophe could be around the corner at any time. So I think it actually kind of makes sense.
You've got Cold War, Vietnam War. There's a lot of tumultuous stuff going on in the 60s. And I think there's some merit to this idea, but it is questionable having it involved in Star Trek. Because, yes, you have this character who's, was he human? He's from a... like in a planet that's mysterious.
But I think what I understood is aliens took some humans to this planet and they've been training them for thousands of years.
Right.
That's what I kind of gathered,
okay.
I guess.
Okay, it's very confusing.
Yes.
And he has this magic pen and he has a cat that follows him around everywhere. And I think there's a whole other question of, is it a good idea to cast a cat as your active sidekick?
Okay, I actually had that in my notes too because like animals are notoriously awful to have on movie sets.
Especially cats.
And I wrote in my notes, is this cat even sustainable? Is that why they turned the cat into a babe at the end?
Not only that was she a babe, she was the Playboy Playmate of 1968.
Wow.
Yes, her name was Victoria Vetri.
Okay.
Yeah. So there you have it.
You know what? I don't know why they didn't get the green light just based on that. Did you find yourself having a little trouble suspending your disbelief at times where, like, Tilly the cadet seems to be at the center of action aboard a starship at war all the time?
It's war, Tyler.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, look, I think Star Trek fans were already used to that with acting Ensign Wesley.
Right.
So I think, you know, we could suspend our disbelief with the Tilly stuff. But to me, I want them to better justify why she's yeah. at the center of action. I think they had a good idea with like pairing her up with Burnham as roommates, you know? Yeah. So that kind of that made sense to me then, I guess.
But we've seen Star Trek try for this sort of thing in little ways. You know, you get, say, like Harry Kim on Voyager, hanging out with Tom Paris. But you never get the sort of commentary, because ultimately Harry Kim's in the room for those meetings with Janeway and, you know, all these powerful characters like Chakotay.
Kes is in the room. like that's kind of, that's the sort of stuff that kind of makes it go, really?
They're like, Neelix, what do you have to say?
I know. Like,
we'd like to throw a party for everyone, Captain. That's a great idea, Neelix.
I really want to calculate how many senior officer meetings Neelix was in. I bet it would shock us. Like, you'd be like, really? Like 40.
What about Taco Tuesdays, Captain?
Make it so. So, Cam, cat spinoff?
Meow. I'm down for it.
Very nice. Very nice. So, we had mentioned before that we're talking a lot about Picard this year, and I expect to do a lot more next year as well.
Four back-to-back episodes, like when the show was announced.
Yeah. It's all good. But though, we had a good friend of the podcast, Penny Deflos. She came on to the show, and we got a little bit into about maybe what Picard's role would be going
forward. Do tell.
Cam, I'll throw it to you first. What do you think Picard is teaching at Starfleet?
It could be archaeology.
Yeah?
Yeah, some sort of like extraterrestrial archaeology.
What about you, Penny? What do you think he'd be a well-matched teacher for when it comes to instructing the young'uns at Starfleet Academy?
That's a real tough one, because I could see him being like a psychology type of professor. You know, this is how you use this type of, you know, person in your command, or this is how you, you know, guide a negotiation, use these personality types against each other. But I could also see him teaching strategy, like military strategy, because he's been in so many situations. So it'd be a really tough one, actually. I think he could fit all sorts of callings in terms of being an instructor. There, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many different facets to his personality.
I would love for him to be teaching like diplomacy. Like, I think that would be kind of like a fun one to do. But look, if he's going to be groundskeeper Boothby going forward, he could teach boxing. Like, we know that from Star Trek Voyager that's what Boothby did.
But we joke about him being like a groundskeeper. But he talked about Boothby in glowing terms. Like, Boothby changed his life. So it would not shock me if old Picard really did become the groundskeeper.
Are they
going to
bring
Academy.
Him back to be groundskeeper Willie? That's like what I keep picturing. And he just, you know.
He like rips off his shirt.
Yes! There's nary an animal alive that can outrun a Grease Scotsman. In this case, would it just be a you know, a Grease Frenchman, right?
I would honestly.
Would fans riot?
I think it's within the realm of possibility that you start the series off with Picard as the new Boothby. Like, I don't think it's out of the question in that, like, they need to pull him back in for some reason, whether he's being a diplomat or they need to send him on some sort of mission, but he starts off as the groundskeeper. I can't, you bring up the point, there's so much reverence that Picard has towards Boothby.
More so than any of the instructors.
Yeah.
He never really talked about the instructors that much.
So,
Boothby changed lives.
Yes. No, I mean, he was an influence on Chakotay, on Wesley. Did Janeway bring up Boothby? I think Janeway did in that episode. Was it Flesh and Blood?
In the Flesh.
In the Flesh?
Maybe. That episode was such a nightmare that I've blocked most of it out, but yeah.
Okay. Cam, all I can say is I cannot wait for the Picard spinoff.
Yes.
Why don't we mosey on over to The Killing Game. Again, we want to give some attention to Voyager, so it's not one but two clips that we want to share with regards to both maybe some of the physics involved in Star Trek, as well as some of the narrative stuff that makes us kind of throw question marks up above our heads.
Yeah, and this is an episode we did with Tony Galush, and he's always so much fun on the podcast. I look forward to having him back sometime soon.
I mean, I understand that this, you know, the safeties are off on this program, and these holographic bullets are flying fast and furious, but does turning the safeties off in a holographic program mean that the holograms don't even realize when they're leaving the holodeck?
Well, they started developing those holographic emitters that extend throughout the corridors, so I guess, but it's tough. I mean, what does the programming tell them to do? Is there a little bit of AI involved where they are kind of, you know, learning as they go and say, okay, well, there's one more place that we can walk. Is it kind of like Sims where you know, I guess if you build a new bridge, you'll get some of your Sims walking over that bridge, and they otherwise would not have gone over that bridge had you not built it. So I wonder if it's a little bit like that.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I don't want to harp on the holodeck too much. I'm sure you guys have done a few holodeck episodes.
Not as many as you'd think.
Yeah.
Really? That's surprising.
I think it's been about 194 episodes since we've taken a deep dive in the holodeck, actually. Yeah. So.
Yeah, so I mean, the question then is, you know, what are these things? And really, is the safety an on-off switch where you know, once the safety's on, nobody can get hurt, but once you flip that safety off, pretty much these holograms can not only harm you, but actually destroy your ship and take over the controls?
I don't even understand why there's a safety's on-off switch, period. Like, does that make any sort of sense?
Okay, let's think about this logically. What scenario on a holodeck would you want to turn the safeties off? And I'm not thinking like battle simulations. Yeah. Is there a real world application you would use the holodeck for that you would want the safeties turned off for?
I can't think of anything though. Like what? Because
I mean, I can see you maybe making it more dangerous. Like you say, a battle simulation. You know, you start off with the Nerf swords, and then maybe you lead into
actual fencing. You want to feel like the pokes or something?
Yeah, something like that. You know, you get zapped or something. But
like, what if you're doing like a karate simulation, and then every time somebody hits you, it just goes right through your body?
Right. Yeah.
You know, so I guess you'd want to take some of the safeties off.
Sure.
Or to a certain degree, like, but you also don't want to get a concussion.
Right. So,
although apparently it's really not a big deal to get injured at all in the future.
No,
when pretty much any injury, you can just have your hologram doctor.
Seven of Nine was getting shot in the spine.
Yeah.
And she was good to go. Yeah.
But I mean, okay, so there's that episode where B'Elanna Torres gets addicted to extreme sports.
It's called Extreme Measures.
Yes. And now, would she be able to do those with the safeties on?
Like, I think she would be able to do the extreme sports, but she'd be in absolutely no danger of getting hurt.
Yes, but then would that remove the adrenaline rush?
Yeah, it would.
So maybe that makes sense for having these.
But then why would the Federation want that?
From a policy perspective, do you really want somebody who's gone through 12 years of Starfleet engineering to...
like dying in a fake skydiving accident?
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I'm also curious, how would that work from just a physics perspective? Like, let's say she did die in a skydiving accident, and
right.
like Tom walks in on the program, and like it's just like, what, her body splattered on the floor of the holodeck all of a sudden? Is a holodeck literally like making her like go up and down, and then like slams her right down into the floor of the holodeck?
Well, I mean, I can picture it being like, you know, those real life, as we have them, those indoor skydiving rooms that are like the, you know, kind of like the enclosed room where you can actually float in the air.
Yeah.
So that's what I picture it being like.
But then there's not the option of us like getting like flung down to the floor so fast that it crushes our bones.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just turning the safeties off. I mean, I can understand maybe Starfleet has come up with a policy document that says, fine, okay, extreme sports, battle simulations, we need to turn the safety off for that. But is there any conceivable situation where you would want armed holographic soldiers who don't know they're not in a battle running through the halls of your ship? I mean, that's not really the kind of safety.
Yeah.
You would kind of want to hardwire that.
Yeah. Would you have to turn the safeties off for the 50 Shades of Grey program?
You know what? Maybe.
Yeah. The Red Room just wouldn't be the same.
I wonder what the liability is for like somebody like Quark, who like obviously that sort of stuff goes on in his holo suites on Deep Space Nine.
Right.
Do you think, you know, you've got to sign something before you go into one of those rooms, or else, you know?
He doesn't seem like he'd be big on paperwork. And I would have liked maybe a little more of a look at, like, what did World War II mean? Because these characters obviously weren't alive then, but, like, what is its legacy? What do these characters really take from it?
Yeah, but, Tony, they even had to explain to some of the characters what World War II was.
That was amusing.
Yeah, so I don't know how memorable it really was then.
Yeah, I do wonder just how detailed this program is. If you have a program that's, you know, the Germans have occupied France in World War II, do you really need to pre-program racist tendencies towards the Japanese in that program? I don't know.
Cam would have.
You know, there's a moment where the SS captain, who's a holodeck character, gives this big speech, this big Nazi speech, and I'm like, you're almost there. Like, this is the sort of thing I think this episode needs a little more of. You know, do the Hirogens when they go into this program, are they taking into account the attitudes and the politics, or is it more just like, we just want combat?
I don't think so. And that was kind of like, I wish they would go to a little bit more of that dangerous, kind of riskier sort of thing, because we actually have that holographic SS captain. He's making reference to the Jewish race.
Yes.
Like, it's like, okay, we get it. This guy's like one evil MF-er.
Right.
The disappointing thing is that this holographic character based on an ancient civilization was enough to convince this young Herojian soldier.
That was unbelievable.
Like, this space-faring alien is just like, I like the way this guy thinks. I mean, was this the equivalent of like those alt-right message boards that seem to sway so many young men nowadays? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, if a hologram can convince you to go rogue, you really got to reevaluate.
Not only that, but it's a hologram character based on someone who was like alive like 300, 400 years earlier. That's like someone from the medieval times coming over and like swaying Tyler to a major life decision.
Yeah, it's really like, you could go to like a barber surgeon to get that fixed, you know? And I'm like,
that's a good idea. You know?
Take out the leeches.
I should become a fool.
All right, so it was great to have Tony on the series, and I always love having guests on. Janine Smith, your sister, she's been on a couple times this year, and it was great having her on Star Trek Discovery. She could lend her insights here, and we really get into one of the biggest mysteries of season one of Star Trek Discovery, which is the origin of the nickname that Vok has in the Mirror universe.
When I heard The Wolf Inside, and, you know, I read that title, I don't know, how many weeks ago when they revealed those? Right. Probably 3 or 4. When I read it, I immediately thought of the Metallica song of Wolf and Men.
Okay.
And I was like, metal, man.
I was thinking more like, well, I was thinking 1980s, but like more like kind of Kenny G sort of like goes badass. Like, yeah, it's The Wolf Inside me. Yeah.
Janine, were you thinking Hungry Like a Wolf?
That's exactly what I was thinking. I didn't look it up till...
Cam, like, is that our closeout music for this episode?
Which one?
Hungry Like a Wolf.
Hungry Like a Wolf, yeah. Maybe.
I didn't look up the title until about last week.
Right.
And then as soon as I read it, I went, oh, they're right about that fan theory.
So you picked it up from the title.
I picked it up from the title. And then in the episode at the start, in the voiceover, I think it was in the voiceover when she was talking directly to Ash and she goes, the darkness inside.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, oh.
Yeah,
that's weird. So having the wolf, the fire wolf or whatever.
Yeah.
And then twisting. It is. It's an interesting name.
Yeah.
But I did know right away when I read that. I said, oh, yeah, that fan theory's right.
Do you think he gave the name to himself?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, definitely.
It's a little like you can't give yourself like real badass names, can you?
But I'm just like, how do you get that name? Like, what circumstance has to happen for it to be like, that's the nickname.
I think there's a torchbearer connection. There's the fire motif. I get that. Yeah. I don't know where the wolf comes in. Are there wolves on Kronos?
Well, Vok is kind of like a lone wolf character.
Oh, because he is the albino.
Yeah.
Okay. So fire lone wolf? That doesn't really roll off the tongue as well. So yeah, maybe just fire
wolf. Lone wolf McFlame.
Yeah, I like that.
So he must have given it to himself.
He's got his own detective agency.
Yeah. It's you know, what do you think came first? The name Firewolf or this episode title?
Probably this episode title.
You think so?
Yeah.
I bet you this episode was first called The Darkness Inside Me.
You think so?
I bet.
Okay.
And then they were like, we need a good nickname.
Right. Or they were listening to Hungry Like a Wolf in the office and they're like,
got it. No, but that's what they were like, we need a good nickname. You know what? Let's break for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back.
It's like, I'm hungry as a wolf. And they're like, hey, whoa.
Yeah.
What did you say?
And then, like, some guy's ringer went off and it was Hungry Like a Wolf. And they're like, that's too many signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then this guy's like, guys, write it down quick. I'm on fire with these ideas. And they're like, whoa. Put those two together. And he's like, wolf fire?
Nope. You're almost
close,
there.
Close. Think of the mirror version.
Oh, fire wolf.
Got it.
Break, gentlemen. We're done for the day.
I still like to think that Lone Wolf McFlame was a very close follow-up.
It was up on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
It had like an underline underneath it, just not two underlines.
Yeah.
Well, Cam, did we crack the code?
Yes, we definitely did.
Sure. Let's go with it there. You know, another Janine Smith appearance came with our Year of Hell two-parter.
Yeah, I do love having people that aren't really, really experienced with the show come on and just tackle these as standalone stories. And they bring insights that would never come from a Star Trek fan who's focused on them purely as Star Trek stories.
Well, this is why I love doing the minutia here. And yeah. I think Janine has a very funny observation, which I follow up with a little bit later on in the episode, that we get a good kick out of it, too.
I had a question. This is for Janine. Now, Janine, there is a scene early in part two where Anorax has dinner with Chakotay and Tom Paris. Did this not feel like a Bond villain dinner?
It really did. He's like, come on in.
I've got delicacies.
This wine is the last of its kind.
Yes.
But what I also found amusing is how he's saying, like, these are the last delicacies of the worlds I've destroyed. And it's literally like a sliced up baguette and a bowl of olives.
Yeah.
Like, there were some definite, like,
they were a simple culture.
There were some other things that you're like, I don't know what that is, but that's all I could see is he said that, and I was like, that's a baguette.
He's not an anthropologist.
You know that the people with props that week were just, like, running to the grocery store next door. They're like, we need something we can use for alien food.
Yeah, what do you think? Like, every replica or remnant of every civilization that they captured was food related.
Yeah.
Like, it was not artwork. It was not music. It was a baguette.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That you could eat and that was it. It's gone.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You know, this is a true life story. Like, I have made food for several TV shows. And that, you know, the way this works is they just, you know, send it out to other places that make food. And there's like, can you prepare something? And we just do it.
Yeah.
And so what we're giving them, they'll wind up using it. You know, I've made quote unquote homemade cookies, home baked cookies for, I think it was Arrow. You know, it's like, so I'm sure they were just like sending an order out.
Were these Arrowroot cookies?
Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
you know, so they just get their, you know, production assistant to swing by, you know, a food store and be like, we need some food that looks kind of alien. Can you just put something together? So, you know, I think the baguette kind of sums that up.
But touching on the bonding. Yeah,
alien baguette.
It did feel very Bond villain because he was kind of about world domination too, right? And then he...
Very sophisticated and rational sounding.
The two prisoners or whatever he took, he gives outfits to.
Right.
They have their own quarters.
Yeah.
And then he even says at one point, he's like to Paris, he's like, I'm going to keep you as comfortable as possible. And that's very Bond villain.
Right.
To be like, I'm going to give you everything you want so that you start to see things from my perspective.
And it felt like Tom Paris was being written in the role of like the Bond girl character.
Oh, yes.
Who would be the one that would lash out.
With the sexy low cut.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Whereas like Chakotay was the Bond guy who's like the Tom Paris character is removed. He's the one like, okay, and goes back to talking to the villain. Very, you know, like two dueling wits with, you know, one another.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was really, really pronounced. And, you know, there's a lot of Bond homages throughout Star Trek, but this one to me felt really, really like obvious.
Well, and just how he was like pouring the wine and over explaining it and then just kicking
back. It's almost like he wants to brag. He's just like, look what I got. Isn't it cool?
And then just kicking back and sort of like watching them.
Yeah.
Like, here, I've laid everything out. I've laid all my cards on the table, if you will. Let's see what you're going to give me.
Well, Tom and Obrist did play that board game later on.
That looked fun.
Well, what did you guys think of Anorax? And we find out by episode two that he believes that time itself is waging a war against him.
I mean, don't we all feel that way?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I'm aging by the day, Tyler. Time is the fire in which I'm burning. I would have liked more just detail given to the potential mutiny on this ship.
Mm.
Because
one Captain Bree, right, as they would say.
Sure, Blythe. But Blythe. I would like... you're still thinking of the cheese on the table, Tyler.
No, I know. I'm munching on
Blythe. But I would like...
Captain Bree.
I would have liked more.
No, I'm thinking back to that dinner that they had.
Yeah, that's
with
what I said.
Yeah,
okay. The baguette.
You're like, Brie would be really good on that baguette.
All right, so following up on that, I think we ended 2017, I think, on a high note. There's a great finale with Star Trek Discovery, but...
A great finale?
Or I should say the mid-season finale.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's at the end of 2017. I think sometimes our end of year episodes kind of get lost in the shuffle. And there's a good clip that actually did not make it into the best of 2017 because I think it's just too close to when we recorded our
best
episode.
It's like a 1 week difference, yeah.
Exactly. So why don't we kind of get into Saru? And I bring this up because, Cam, you asked me last week, you know, who is your favorite character from Star Trek Discovery at this point? And I said Saru. And it wasn't always the case. And honestly, it wasn't the case until I actually did this Blu-ray rewatch very recently. So it's very fascinating to see how my feelings of a character kind of evolves and how I think important it is to maybe, I guess, absorb a series holistically.
Right. And also this clip's really interesting in the wake of The Brightest Star.
You brought up Saru just a second ago.
Yeah.
And this is a character that I've been disappointed with.
He has been, to me, I think, the biggest failing of the series so far.
I hesitate to call it a failing in that I like the character.
Right.
I don't see anything particularly wrong with the character, but it's a character I see having so much more potential that's just gone unrealized at this point.
Right. Yeah.
Do you? What do we need from Saru going forward to make him a more fully fleshed out character that we're more invested in?
Well, I think with Saru, they have a serious issue in that they haven't hammered down what his struggle is.
This is kind of the key that always makes writers think, oh man, why? What did I not figure out? You have to ask what the character wants.
Yes.
Cam, what does Saru want?
Quiet?
He doesn't want to feel fear.
Tranquility?
Sure.
And the thing is, with Data, there was a very identifiable, I want to be human. You know, it's the Pinocchio story referenced right in Encounter at Farpoint. You know, with Odo, there's that, he's a changeling. He doesn't feel like he belongs. He wants to know where he came from, his origins. Saru? What does he want?
And usually I know people could say, well, it's very early on in the series.
Sure.
But I think that should be established very early on in the series. What is the character's motivation? At least with characters with, you know, we pointed out Lorca, we're a little bit on the fence, even though we really like the character.
Yeah.
I still understand what he wants. Burnham, I understand what Burnham wants. So, but with Saru, it hasn't quite hit me yet. And when they give him, like, a Saru-centric episode with CV Pack and Parabellum, I was kind of bummed out. I thought Choose Your Pain was actually a far better Saru story than his standout episode.
And
apparently,
what's weird is that Saru started out really strong in his, what, first three or four episodes. He had scenes with Burnham that were just like fireworks. And it seemed like he just kind of fizzled out from that point forward. And, you know, you and I talked on the podcast going back and forth, like why is Saru on Discovery? Why would this character want to be on this ship?
Well, I think conscription, or not conscription, but he was assigned.
Sure.
He's fulfilling his duty.
Shouldn't he be freaked out on this ship?
Well, that's what I would think so.
Yes.
He's on a warship under a very different kind of captain than Giorgio was. So, yeah.
He seems completely fine with Lorca.
But here's this. I don't think there's no hope for the Saru character. In fact, that's why I'm excited about seeing his journey. I think there's a lot of, you know, potential for this character that I think it's going to happen eventually.
I want him to be like Spock when he served with Pike. You know, like Saru's just laughing at flowers right now.
Sure.
But once we get different captains, only Saru blossoms into like the greatest character of all time.
But instead of flowers, we're talking about blue mist.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we go from Saru, who we do know can be, you know, consumed in the Mirror Universe as a Kelpian, why don't we keep that food theme going here from yet another Star Trek Voyager two-parter. This is Equinox. You and I did this one-on-one. This is a fun one. And we, again, coming off the Firewolf discussion about nicknames, we get back into the whole nickname thing once again. What's Chakotay's sandwich name, by the way?
Well, it's just one word, so it's like, I don't know, casserole.
Casserole? Is that a sandwich?
No, does it have to be a sandwich?
Yeah, it does.
Just,
okay. Well, there's turkey platter. That's not really a sandwich. So, weird thing is, in my mind for the last 20 years, I thought Harry Kim said turkey pastrami.
Okay.
But it turned out to be turkey platter. Doesn't
right.
turkey pastrami make way more sense?
It does, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, I don't know, your chicken salad. Yeah,
chicken sandwich.
Chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
Chicken salad makes more sense, though.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, either one.
Your chicken salad.
Okay.
There's turkey platter,
yeah.
BLT. There's meatball bacon. I'm trying to think of...
Titus Welliver is a tuna on wheat.
Tuna on wheat, which that's a good one.
Yeah.
Rudy Ransom. We need a good one for Rudy Ransom.
Well, there's the Reuben. So,
Reuben on Rye?
Yeah, there you go. Reuben on Rye.
All our listeners are gone now.
That or they're coming up with their own right now as we speak.
Okay. So. We still don't have a good one for me. Which,
no.
T-O seems kind of like there should be something obvious, but I don't know what to do with the O.
Onion?
Okay, onion. Yeah.
Toasted onion?
Toasted onion sandwich? That sounds disgusting.
Well, it's very unappealing.
Oh, maybe that fits
me
then.
Yeah, maybe that's appropriate.
Okay, so I'm toasted onion. Okay, Cam. Or should I say chicken salad?
Or tuna Orton.
Tuna Orton. No, I was toasted onion.
Toasted onion.
That was, I can't believe you would ever contemplate a toasted onion sandwich, Cam. That's disgusting. Speaking of things that I can't imagine you contemplating, why don't we talk a little bit about Deep Space Nine? And we kind of had a little bit of a funny debate about the experience of binge watching Deep Space Nine, which you had the pleasure of doing a couple years ago, versus my week-to-week experience. And
a couple years ago. This podcast has been going like for 4 years. I think that was like 7-8 years ago, I think.
Oh,
I watched
yeah.
Deep Space Nine. It's been, time flies, man.
Yeah. And so, but I'm going back to, you know, back in the 90s, I was watching it week to week, and it's just like, wow, how do you kind of experience a series differently week to week versus that binge watching experience that you get nowadays?
What I love about this cliffhanger is actually what I emphasized early on about what I like about a cliffhanger is that we know that Ben Sisko is going to try and retake Deep Space Nine, but we don't know how, we don't know the specifics. We just know there's an open-ended sense of, like, he's rejoining the fleet to do something.
Well, although the cliffhanger there is, remember we see the Defiant joining the fleet?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, over that summer, everybody thought the fleet was immediately going right back to DS9.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, so it was funny. Like, you didn't have that summer of having to wait to see what had happened next. And I can tell you,
I had like 10 minutes before pulling the DVD out, swapping in the other DVD.
Okay,
but I was in anticipation that whole time.
Okay,
I kept dropping the disc. I was so excited.
Fingers were jittery. Yeah. Your fingers are sweaty.
I had to keep wiping off the disc because the sweat was just falling all over it.
I can totally picture that being my case as well, if that was the thing. Okay, so Cam, why don't we keep up the Cam Smith theme about your watching habits? We'll jump from Deep Space Nine and go into how you got into Star Trek Enterprise, which is an amusing story.
And sad. Then I was like, you know what? I just want to throw on Enterprise because I was going to the Star Trek convention in Vegas that year. And obviously, I see a lot of the Enterprise people. I was like, you know what? I should watch the pilot. And so I at least have an idea as to what they're kind of talking about, like who their characters were at least. Mm-hmm. And I sat down, watched the pilot, and then I was like, wow, I got to watch more of this. And I ended up burning through, I don't know, maybe like 6, 7, 8 episodes before the convention. And then I got sick the last, like, once the convention was over, I got the con flu. And I spent, whatever, my last day in Vegas in the hotel room watching Enterprise episodes.
Yeah.
And
with the cast.
I have no, with the cast. Yeah. Scott Bakula kept hogging all the popcorn.
Yeah.
You know? But I was
from
like,
the sick man. Mixing fingers in there. Yeah.
Don't worry, they brought the decon gel.
Yeah, well, that's Scott Bakula. He is known as just a complete mensch, so good on him for spending time with you there, sir.
Dominic Keating? Not so much. I kid.
He's actually fun to be around at these conventions. I actually, like, I think he's been to almost every single convention I've gone to.
Yeah.
And he brings it. So
definitely.
I'm down for that. Cam, why don't we cap off our best of with a little discussion? For you and I as Star Trek fans, it is always a highlight of the year when we get to go to the Star Trek Las Vegas convention. We're there for more than a week. We're hanging out with so many Star Trek fans from around the world. And you and I both have huge highlights coming out of this. Why don't we kick it off with your story? And then we'll get into one of our favorite friends and favorite guests' own thoughts about our podcast right after that.
So, guys, beyond the Picard news, let's talk about some of our big highlights from Star Trek Las Vegas. Cam, I'll throw it to you because you had a really amazing encounter with one of the actors from Star Trek Discovery. Take it away.
Well, this kind of started on the podcast where when we were in the first couple episodes, I guess it was maybe Context is for Kings.
Yep.
I had expressed admiration for the character of Landry and how I was a big fan, and Tyler dubbed me a Fandry, which became a kind of a comedic hashtag between the two of us and some of our other friends. And I'm sure, Scott, you are aware of this.
Oh, very aware. I never stopped hearing about it.
Right. And so when, you know, Landry was coming back in the Mirror Universe version, I had friends, like, texting me and making fun of me, and the hashtag Fandry thing was getting thrown around.
You were texting us.
Yeah. It was giddy. Yeah.
And so when I heard Rekha Sharma was coming to Star Trek Las Vegas, I bought a photo op immediately, like, literally within probably half an hour of her being announced.
Do you know what number on the tickets? Because for those who aren't familiar, you get numbers on the tickets that indicate what order you bought the photo op for.
Right. I believe I was number 5 or 6. It was, really
so
low numbers.
You're the number 5 Fandry then.
Sure, okay. Sure. But I was like, okay, that's not enough. I got to make this pay off for all that podcast buildup. So I had a t-shirt made with a photo of her, and below in big font it said, hashtag Fandry. And so I went to my photo op, and I was nervous, guys.
Oh, I could tell.
Especially when the woman who was kind of the volunteer who was overseeing the line called me out in a crowd and is like, did you make that shirt just for this photo op? And I didn't even say anything. I just kind of went, like, nodded my head and tried to fade into the background because everyone had just turned and looked at me. But I got up. She saw the shirt and just, like, lit up and ran over and hugged me. And she was like, I can't believe, did you make that for me or whatever? And I said, well, I know Vancouver represent, because I should say the actress is from Vancouver. And we fist bumped and whatever. And she asked where I lived. And I said, I, you know, grew up in Upper Lynn Valley. And she lived actually very close to me growing up, about like 10 minutes away, basically. So, you know, we just kind of bonded over that. And it was the best possible experience I could ever have hoped for. And, you know, later a friend of ours was trying to convince me to go to her autograph line and get her to sign the photo. And I said, no, I can't. Because if I go up there, whatever happens at the autograph will not be as good as that photo opportunity.
I think that was very smart on your part, Ken.
Yes.
So do you think that's one of your best fan encounters, period, at a Star Trek convention?
I think it might be the best.
Yeah.
Because everyone, I think, who goes to these photo lines, you're kind of hoping for some kind of moment with the star. And most of the time, you're not going to get it. I did like 10 photo ops this weekend, and none of the others were that memorable. I mean, you know, they were pleasant. No one was a jerk to me or in any way, shape, or form. But it's kind of like, hey, how are you? Goodbye. You know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And definitely this one was kind of that moment you kind of hope for.
Well, I mean, like, we do get, you know, a lot of encounters with the stars here. I mean, like,
sure.
in the hallways, you know, you'll say, hey, I love you, Max Grodinchek, or Von Armstrong, great to see you up on stage performing, you know, songs for the fans.
Sure.
But, like, having, like, a real kind of connection, interaction, seeing, like, an actor is, like, really excited about your devotion.
Right,
you know? I mean, and you guys are able to connect over just where you grew up.
Right.
So, I mean, that's very exciting.
I think it also helps that this is her first Star Trek convention.
Sure, yes.
I mean, if I had caught her on her 15th.
She would have, and you're still trying to get her to sign your photo? I mean, that's still awkward.
Yeah, yeah.
You had 14 preceding autographs on that one photo already. She's like, enough, kid. Enough. Hey, this is Tyler Orton with my dear friend, Jesse Oquendo. Jesse, we are here at the Star Trek Las Vegas 2018 convention, and I just want to hear from you. What are, you know, some of your highlights here at the convention? Sum it up.
The biggest highlight was Patrick Stewart saying he's coming back.
What do you think of the idea of Patrick Stewart coming back to Star Trek? I mean, obviously, it's a highlight for you. What are you excited to see of a return of one Jean-Luc Picard?
I'm excited to see more Star Trek on TV, so it's not necessarily...
You're not watching Star Trek Discovery right now, is that it?
I am watching Star Trek Discovery when it's on. I'm just saying it's more variations of Star Trek. Like, I know people didn't like it, but I love when Voyager and Deep Space Nine were on at the same time because you could choose which one you wanted. So I'm just looking forward to seeing that happen again. Hopefully it'll come out that way.
So Patrick Stewart, obvious highlight. Is there anything, did you go to any other, I don't know, smaller events or, you know, like, were there any other panels that, like, jumped out to you? Of course, other than the subspace transmissions panel.
Well, I was going to say the subspicions transporter panel.
Subspicions transporter panel. Thank you, Jesse.
Classic. Just classic. But what I like about, you know, that whole story that I just told in that clip is that it was all born from a joke on this podcast. So it just shows that even the stupidest ideas we can come up with on this podcast could lead to great things.
Cam, I can't wait till those hashtag Fandry shirts that you're selling at the conventions just make you millions.
I'm just waiting till your bring back B'Elanna hashtag really pays off down the road.
You know what? Who knows? S.J. Clarkson might not be doing the next film anymore. She seems to be attached to some other things. If they ever unearth this script that's been written, maybe they'll bring back B'Elanna for the director job.
Yeah.
Okay. So, sir, that was a fun way to talk about, you know, this past year of the podcast. But, you know, I think we try to really represent what's recorded on air. But every once in a while, there's just some, like, bloopers that we're like, there's no way this can make it on air. It just makes us look even more unprofessional than we already do here.
Sure.
So why don't we roll a couple, and then I think we also need to set up another one that's going to roll in just a minute.
The big finale.
The big finale, because otherwise I think a lot of people will be left scratching their heads if we just go into that without any sort of explanation.
For sure. Well, roll the shame.
Well, the other question that I have about this is I wonder how much the formation of the Federation influenced the expansionism of the Romulan Star Empire. We don't ever exactly know how influential or how expansive the Empire was at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But Cam, do you think if the Empire... Look, we do know there's the Earth-Romulan War, and
right.
it eventually kind of leads to the formation of the Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And the Romulans see this, and they're like, well, wait a minute. We need to expand as well. We can't have this other alliance that, you know, is going to become more and more powerful be, I guess, the next kind of dominant player here in the scene.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, what was the question?
I want you to start like humming some of the worst audio slave riffs out there.
Can you do one? I'm not asking you to hum it, but like, do you actually?
Let me sit away from the mic a little bit, and I'm just gonna be doing like Chris Cornell at this point, and it's not gonna sound anything like it. And
okay.
Maybe use this for the bloopers later on this year. Like,
sure. I don't see it.
You recognize that at all?
No.
Okay. it's just like the melody a little bit for, okay. Like, I think it was like their lead single.
And we're here this week to talk about, where we'll tie all these threads of bizarre jokes up front together, talking about the Voyager season 5 finale, season 6 premiere, Equinox.
I actually need to step away from the mic because I spilled a little bit of
a okay.
So I was very distracted. I apologize. I figured you'd, You can find me at Reportin. That's R as in Rules of Acquisition. How do I spell the rest of Reportin? Okay. Okay, Cam. Those are pretty hilarious, though. But this one, you and I had the bright idea of, for our body swapping episode, why don't we ourselves swap bodies?
Yeah.
And
Tyler, ever so cocky, I made the inquiry. I said, well, if we screw up, maybe we should stop. And you just were like, I'm not going to screw up.
Yeah.
Maybe you will, but I won't.
I said that word for word, and
yeah.
I was totally serious. And, well, I think you'll find out who screwed up more.
Yeah, keep a tally at home.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge...
This is Tyler Orton, feeling Mr. Spock's probes.
Wow, that's an image I'm not sure I needed, Tyler. So anyways, what is this week's conundrum, sir?
Well, we're going to talk about... It's body swapping time.
You okay?
I thought you usually do the... Cam always says what the conundrum is. That's what threw me.
No, we often switch.
Okay.
Do you want to start at the beginning?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's I always say hello, welcome to Subspace.
So, Cam, what we did when we talked about Star Trek's most awkward moments, which is a fun episode, is we ranked the awkward moments on a warp scale.
Yeah.
Sorry. I f***ed up.
Yeah, you did.
I called you Cam.
I still can't pronounce it properly. This is new to me, Tyler.
Yeah,
I've been calling it the wrong thing for years now.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Embarrassing.
Yeah. Yes, it is. you're
my years of reading 1990s Marvel comics has just ingrained in me to say symbiote.
Sorry, you called me Tyler.
It's Star Trek's most progressive episode.
Oh, God, Cam. Or, oh, God, Tyler. Like, seriously? Okay, so warp scale, Cam. Where do you put Lester? So, as in, like, the actress.
Did you say Cam?
Here's all the great blooper stuff that we've been waiting for. Okay. And for those who may not know what Cam's referring to as the Jihad.
It's an animated series episode.
It is literally an episode.
Okay, and you can find me at Reportin. That's REPORTON. N as in next time I'm body swapping with Ben Yong, Smith.
Smith. Ben Yong Smith. Wow.
Hold on.
Hey, more fodder for the... This is going to be 90% of our bloopers.
Okay.
And until next time, the assignment starring Rosalind Chow is complete.
Closed.
Yeah. It's all I really hope... Okay, Cam, the best part of that, though, is I don't think a lot of our listeners picked up on the fact that we swap bodies. Even some of our closest friends did not pick up on the fact.
They can't tell us apart anyway.
No, exactly. So, look, Cam, it's been an absolute blast of a year. I think 2018 was just one of the best years that we've been doing this podcast period. I think just the consistency of the episodes and the amount of just content that we had to dive into, the things that we were able to discuss. The fact of the matter is we're closing in on 250 episodes.
I know.
And, you know, I still feel like just energized by everything.
A kid in a candy store.
Well, exactly. But think about it. Like, are we going to be, you know, like lacking contents anytime soon? We've got Discovery coming up in the winter / early spring. We'll have a bit of a hiatus, but then we'll be doing the Star Trek convention. Then we have Picard in probably the fall.
And they've hinted there will be more short treks coming.
Yeah.
So we could be tackling those as well post season 2 Discovery. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll get to cover Discovery season 2 on Blu-ray. Maybe. And do that holistic kind of viewing again. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff coming up. It feels like our schedule is going to be way busier than any other time in the history of this podcast. And that's really exciting. And daunting.
Yeah.
Just because of scheduling. Like, we've never in the past had to worry about air dates. It didn't really matter when we scheduled to do the podcast. But now with these shows coming out, we want to have the episode of the podcast out, you know, so people aren't hearing about, you know, for example, Magic to Make the Sinist Man Go Mad, like 7 days after it aired.
Exactly. Like, we want people to know that they can come to us first. And even if, like, the podcast isn't going to be up, you know, like the night of, we're going to have videos up. So you should be following us on YouTube as well. And look, it's going to be a lot of work for us. But if we didn't love doing it, then I guess we would have quit. Like, another co-host did many a year ago.
Merry Christmas, Ben Yong. But I had a...
That's somebody who deserves coal in his stocking. And I mean the Klingon from the House Core.
I had a question for you. This year, we had so many big announcements, as we talked about off the top of this episode, with like Lower Decks and the Mirror Giorgio spinoff that could possibly happen. What do you think are some potential announcements we could hear next year?
Well, we've debated it. Maybe the Captain Pike has potential for some spinoff there.
I think we're going to find out one way or another whether Star Trek 4 happens.
So I am pretty certain we will get at least one more adventure.
You're taking a bet on that, aren't you, with our friend Scott Hardy?
Who's been a guest on the series as well.
Yeah.
I just think about it logically, though. What else does Paramount have coming down the pike? Like, there's such a lack on their slate that they need to make this happen. I think it's suffering quite a bit from having a new regime come in.
Yeah.
The fact that they don't want to actually, you know, abide by the contracts that they signed with Hemsworth and Pine.
Yeah.
It just seems silly and nonsensical to me.
Yeah.
But everything seems to line up. It indicates that we will be getting at least one more adventure with this crew.
Yeah, I guess they've got, what, Top Gun 2, I think, is them. They've got, who knows what'll happen with this Bumblebee spinoff and opening up that Transformers world again. We'll see if that movie performs. But yeah, you are right. Paramount doesn't have a lot coming up that's, you know, it's all about big buzz for like a lot of like geek-friendly stuff and franchise stuff nowadays. And Paramount just doesn't have a lot, and they can't really compete in the marketplace unless they have something. And Star Trek definitely has that kind of geek buzz. It's just the question of whether they can restore the buzz, because Beyond did not have that. And I think if they can put out, you know, whether this S.J. Clarkson film is something to get really excited about, or the Tarantino vapor project out there in the universe, it would be cool if they could figure out a way to make Star Trek exciting again.
Yeah, I think really with Beyond is mostly a marketing issue, mm-hmm. you know, and so I have to believe that they'll be able to figure something out with this, and because really Paramount's got no other choice. Like Paramount yeah. literally has no other choice at this point. These aren't money losers. They make the money. Give the guys the money that they were promised. You'll make money, Paramount. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think there'll be any other shows announced? Because we had a whole bunch of them coming up, you know, this yeah. or this year that have been greenlit. Like, do you see them announcing a whole flurry of other shows?
I don't know about a flurry, but I'd yeah. say at least one.
Yeah, I think that Pike one is probably the best bet.
Okay.
Okay, we just want to thank, of course, everyone who tuned in this year. We had a great time doing the podcast, but it's always awesome hearing from all of you. It really makes the whole, what can sometimes be a lot of work for some of us, you know, all worthwhile. And we love hearing from you guys on the Facebook page and, you know, wherever we have links up or on Twitter. It's always really satisfying. And it's always fun to know that, as you know, we have a blast doing our discussions in this room between the two of us or a third if there's a guest. But it's nice to know there's people out there who are engaging in the conversation as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment for 2018 is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing for the first week of 2019?
Well, not quite the first week. We're probably the second week. But our first week back, it's going to be covering the latest and last confirmed short trek, which is focused on Harry Mudd. And then after that, it's not going to be all Discovery all the time. Of course, we'll be doing the episodes week to week, but we also have another fun episode coming up between the short trek and the premiere of Star Trek Discovery that you and I are both really looking forward to doing. I think we've wanted to do this for a long time, and actually the timing makes sense to get into the new year. So keep tuning in. We've got so much more coming down the pike, just content-wise.
Is that a pun?
As always, it must be, yeah.
Okay, so you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vedic Bryles Gratitude Festival equals Star Trek Christmas, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P, P as in Pike Puns for the win, O-R-T-O-N.
So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.